but that's the old.
Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or 95.3 too. I keep forgetting that we also have 95.3 FM as I think I've got the right, I don't even know if I have the right frequency there, but
I think it's 92.3 unless I've been wrong.
92.3 is correct. But there's also a 95 frequency. That's my co-host, Jeremy Breach.
Look at us.
Yeah. So there are two FM frequencies. I never remember to mention the second one. And then, of course, 1620 AM, which is the original frequency for this station. So whether you are listening to us live on the radio, where whatever radio station you've managed to pick us up on, or, you know, I don't know, maybe if you get the radio on your fillings in your teeth, or, you know, I've heard of that happening.
Yeah. I thought that was just me.
Weird things, or, you know, internet radio, or, you know, carrier pigeon, or whether you know, any of those options, or of course the more convenient option of the podcast version of the show, which you can get anytime you like, anywhere you like. We're going to try to bring your day, make your day even a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Jeremy Branch is here, my co-host. You already heard him. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's my favorite time of year.
I should probably know what radio stations are on, shouldn't I?
We'll fix it in post. Just plug it in afterwards.
Yeah, no, we won't. No, we won't. We're gonna let it go like we're Elsa. But I'm gonna look it up so I say it correctly. I did say it correctly for the record. 95.3, 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620.
1620.
And also, if you have high definition radio, 98.7 FM on HD3.
Ooh.
So, you know. Soon to come,
no
soon,
deal.
Soon to be coming to a speaker near you somewhere, hopefully. And we'll
sounds like you just grab that radio dial and spin it randomly and you might end up on us.
Yeah. And yet we still don't know if anybody's listening.
Stop it. I'm just glad to be here. I'm glad to be talking about some George R. R. Martin with you.
Yeah. We're going to spend the show today talking about the world of Westeros. And I think that's, you know, we were talking before the show about, like, what do we call this? Like, I know the original book series is A Song of Ice and Fire, and, like, people tend to go to Game of Thrones because that was the first series, and they call it, you know, Game of Thrones universe, and that doesn't really quite fit either. But the world is Westeros.
Yeah, you know, I actually guess there's a fandom page called World of Westeros, so you just now stumbled into the best way of describing the series.
I mean, if the world that started with Hogwarts is known as the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, then I think it's fair to call this the World of Westeros.
Yeah.
Or the Wizarding World of George R. R. Martin.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like that, actually. Kind of like that, actually. I mean, there are kind of some, like, have we seen wizards in this world?
No, we've got a three-eyed raven.
I mean, we've seen witches and maesters, and, you know, because what's her face? The red woman, wasn't she kind of a witch?
Yeah, I think you could say that. They called her the Red Witch.
Yeah, so I mean, I think Marvel ought to sue somebody, but, you know. But, you know, Martin's done stuff with Marvel too, so I guess maybe they're buddy buddy, even though this is Warner for now, and not because, you know, when this merger goes through, this will be yet another property that gets subsumed into the gaping maw of Skydance / Paramount / Warner Brothers / Goodyear / Crisco / you know, what other things are this conglomerate going to suck up, you know?
Uh-huh.
Delta Airlines. I don't know. You know. So what you know, they're gonna get into manufacturing widgets and household cleaners and the yellow fuzz that comes on tennis balls and you know, who knows what else, you know. The appetite for consumption never dwindles.
No, it does not.
Soon they will consume all. Soon they will own all. Soon all will be Ellison. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit cynical about that whole thing. I don't think I've made a secret of the fact that I'm not real happy about the fact that all of these companies are converging into each other. And it's not just the Paramount Warner merger, but in general, like, I mean, we can go back to the Disney buying 20th Century. I mean, all of these things, there are good sides and bad sides to them. But, you know, the more I think about, like, the more things that we talk about that are now going to be part of this one gigantic conglomeration, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we don't know what's going to happen to these properties in the long run. And to think that, you know, now this company that already controlled so much is going to control so much more that is meaningful to us. And, you know, I'm just talking on a basic level here. I'm talking about things that are part of the zeitgeist, but things that, like, I think are important to Jeremy and I personally. And this world is one of them. You know, the world of Westeros is definitely something that Jeremy and I are very all in on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I hope. And I mean, that's all we can do, hope and speculate. But I think that there are certain things that they're probably just not going to get too involved with, because if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I guess there's even debates to be had about whether or not the world of Westeros is broken. But I will say that I think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is certainly a step in the right direction and a return to form.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. But I just kind of want to think about, like, Warner Brothers already owns a lot of properties. And I think in general, they've been a pretty good steward of them and a pretty good steward of keeping them apart from each other and running generally smoothly. I mean, there are hiccups and bumps, and, you know, some franchises work better than others sometimes, and that's just the nature of creativity. They don't necessarily decide we're going to put all the toys in one toy box and shake up the toy box and dump them out. Unless it's something like a game like Multiverses, where that was the fun of that, is that here's a big toy box and you can play with all these characters from different universes in it, and it's kept to itself. It's its own thing that's separate. Like, you don't have to worry about anything that happens in that, just because Arya Stark and Bugs Bunny are both in it. You don't have to worry about Bugs Bunny showing up in Game of Thrones. I'm not necessarily convinced that the new owners have that kind of restraint to where we're not going to see stuff thrown together just to throw it together because they think it'll turn a profit. Like, I'm not sure that we don't see, you know, I don't necessarily think Westeros is the place I'm most worried about it, although I could definitely see them deciding that, oh, you know, Westeros and Harry Potter both have magic and we own both of those things. So what would happen if we had, you know, a Game of Thrones Harry Potter crossover?
You just now laid up a whole conversation the FCC would not approve of, so we'll just move past that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could do that. They could very much decide that, you know, and that's all within Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers right now keeps those things separately. But add to that the Paramount of it all coming into play now. So we could have, you know, them deciding Star Trek is in the future of the DC Universe. And there's, you know,
that would be weird.
We could have, you know, Superman teaming up with Captain Kirk. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is up to you to decide. We could have, you know, the Justice League versus the Transformers. Is that something we want to see?
For those crossovers, that would work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so Ghostface versus Freddy Krueger. You know,
yeah.
Is that something we want to see? Or, you know, and do we trust the people that now are going to be controlling these properties to have that kind of self-control to not glut the market with stuff like that because they think it's going to make money?
Try it once to figure out if it'll work or not.
Well, but they try it once, it's going to work once.
That's a good point. That's fair. Everything might work once.
Yeah. So, you know, I have concerns about that. So that, you know, is the overarching concern about anything that's owned by Warner Brothers right now is what are the new masters going to do with it? And I think that has to apply to the world of Westeros as well as anything. But we're going to get into the current world of Westeros right after we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
things right. You and I must fight for our rights. You and I must fight to survive.
Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. Jeremy, man, I know that doesn't sound like something you'd hear in Westeros, but is that not something you'd hear in Westeros?
It's a great song. I'm a big fan of Muse, and Knights of Cydonia is just an absolute banger.
I mean, lyrically, it fits. It's just so in tune with like everything in the George R. R. Martin world, while like not being, you know, that style at all. Somebody needs to make a supercut video with that song and clips from like some of the big action moments throughout all of the series in Westeros. I think that would be something that I would enjoy the heck out of watching.
Absolutely.
Speaking of something I enjoyed the heck out of watching, we do have a new series set in the world of Westeros that just recently wrapped up its first season, and that is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And it's been interesting to kind of, I had the experience of, because this came out while we were in the run-up to PensCon, I didn't really get a chance to watch it week to week. So I kind of binged the whole thing after it was over, but it was interesting to kind of gauge the reaction that the series seemed to be getting online, in that it seemed like, to some extent, people weren't vibing with it.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me, and I honestly was quite surprised to hear it. On Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave it a 94. The audience gave it a 77, making it much lower than what they were probably hoping for.
Yeah, and I don't get it, because I do think it's a very solid series. I get it a little bit, because I think that people were not prepared for this to be... Overall, and there are exceptions because it's still the world of Westeros. It's still going to be fairly dark in a lot of places. But this is a lighter tone than anything else we've seen in this universe before. It is borderline a comedy. I mean, definitely has some comedic elements to it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people maybe weren't prepared for that. But I think it works. I think it's a big enough universe for there to be room for that kind of thing. And it's definitely a smaller story, but it still has stakes. It still has heft. It still has some very dark things that happen. But there are places where it is laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think the first kind of shining example of it, and I'm curious to hear your take on it, is instead of cueing the iconic theme from Game of Thrones and later House of the Dragon, it begins the progression, so you think the big epic theme's about to happen, and then it cuts to silence as we see Dunk relieving himself behind a small tree off the side of a trail.
Yeah, maybe that was a little more explicit than I needed it to be.
There's a couple of those scenes, isn't there?
Yeah, there are places where they're like, oh yeah, we're on HBO. And not in the like prurient way of the early seasons of Game of Thrones, just like in a, well, we can get away with showing this, so we're going to show it.
Yeah, they call him Arwen Penny Tree, but I'd say that's at least like Arwen quarter of a tree.
It was the most impressive prosthetic since Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights, that's for sure.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but yeah. It gets a little earthy. That's the way we can put it. I think it's fair to say. And I think that it is kind of important to establishing the tone here and the world here. Does it always go in a direction that I would like it to go in? No, but that's okay. It's, you know, it's a choice.
So it does
kind of reflect the world that our focal point character is coming from. And unlike the other series that we've seen so far in the world of Westeros, this show definitely has a viewpoint character and a protagonist.
Right. Where most of A Song of Ice and Fire is a very top-down view of Westeros, Dunk and Egg is very much a bottom-up narrative. And that kind of ties to what you're saying, where we have a distinct point of view character. It's Sir Duncan the Tall, and he is a scrappy kid from Flea Bottom who wanted nothing more than to be a knight, and his small aspiring squire, Egg, and the kind of small scale adventures that they have. And so if you're an audience member and what you love out of Game of Thrones is White Walkers and dragons and political machinations between the elite, this show very much subverts all of those things. But what I love the most about it is a show about doing the right thing, even when the right thing is the hardest possible thing you could do. And I think that that's so refreshing in George R.R. Martin's morally dubious, conniving, scheming world.
I think there's still some of the politics in there, not as much as the other series, of course. And but I think it's interesting that that's the tack you take with this, because I do think that Sir Duncan the Tall is a very moral character, and I think he definitely has a code of honor. But it's also heavily implied that he is acting under what do they call it? When somebody is stolen valor. That's the phrase I'm looking for.
Yeah. Like, I was going to ask you what you thought about that.
Yeah, like it's never outright said, but it is heavily implied that while he is out there acting as a knight and calling himself Sir Duncan the Tall, he may not have actually been knighted by his master.
Which brings up the question of what is a knight? Is it an official title, or is it the desire to do the right thing? I mean, especially in this world where other knights, they're all motivated by self-interest or the glory or any of those number of things. And Dunk is a character that literally seems to aspire to just help people. And in a way, isn't that more knightly than a simple title?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. Like, in spirit, he is absolutely worthy of the title of Sir Duncan. You know, he is maybe the most moral character that we have seen in the world of Westeros.
Yeah.
You know, period. You know, there's very little, like, dubious here. And, you know, this is a character that has struggled and has put others before himself everywhere, every step of the way.
There's this funny scene. Peter Claffey is the name of the actor that plays Dunk, and he's talking to Tanville, and she says, all men are knights and all men are fools. And he kind of just like stands there slack-jawed. He has no idea what to say. And I think he's such a funny character because he's kind of a himbo.
He is. He's not the sharpest sword in Westeros. I think that's fair to say. And I think some of it too is, in fairness to him, is that he's taken with her.
Yeah.
Like there's like a on his part, at least, I don't know about on her part, but there's like a love at first sight thing going on there.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, you know, he's a little bit slack jawed and googly eyed beyond just maybe not being the smartest guy in the world, because he's like bewildered by this Dornish puppeteer who, you know, really ends up becoming the kind of the reason he gets in over his head through no fault of her own.
It's very much a kind of fish out of water tale from Dunk's perspective, but to kind of also on the point of him not being super bright, Egg is really giving some pretty clear indications that he may not be who he thought he was.
Well, let's talk
in his knowledge and all that stuff.
Let's talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. Jeremy, have I ever mentioned to you how stupid I think the FCC is?
Only offline or off the call usually, but I've got nothing but good things to say about them myself.
That's not really relevant to anything else. We're talking about the world of Westeros and specifically the new series Knight of the Seven Kingdoms on HBO and HBO Max, and the overall worlds of George R.R. Martin. So we left off before the break talking about the secondary focus character of this series, and that being Sir Duncan the Tall's Squire Egg, as we're introduced to him as. You know, I struggle over how we talk about this a little bit, because the show plays it like it's a big secret that Egg is hiding something about who he is. But at the same time, like, if you know anything about this world, and if you've, you know, read anything about the show, you know who he is. And it's one of those.
Let's just go ahead and put up the spoiler warning. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's one of those big, you know, like, it would play really well if you didn't know what the twist is, but everybody knows what the twist is. Kind of like
From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn is one example of that, where, you know, they had to put in the trailers that it was going to turn into a vampire movie instead of leaving it to be a surprise halfway through the movie. So we learned, and again, spoiler warning, if for some reason you don't know much about this world and you haven't watched the show yet, that Egg is not who he depicts himself as. He never says he's not. He kind of does actually say that he's not the stable boy, or at least that he could be the stable boy if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And he follows Sir Duncan and wants to become his squire, and does become his squire. And then we learn that Egg is actually short for Aegon. And if you know this world, you know that the name Aegon is a very significant name. He is a Targaryen.
His name is Aegon.
He is a Targaryen. He's running around with a shaved head, so you don't see the trademark white blonde hair. And, you know, he presents himself as being this poor stable boy that wants to become a squire. And he is actually a prince of the realm.
Yeah.
And that causes as many problems for Duncan as defending the honor of this Dornish puppeteer who he's fallen for does. He, you know, he jumps in to protect her when another Targaryen attacks her for having the temerity to depict a dragon being slain in a puppet show.
So on this timeline, which is about 70 years after House of the Dragon and 100 years before Game of Thrones, the Targaryens are not the powerful house that they used to be in Westeros, and it's mostly because they've lost their dragons.
Yeah, they're still the rulers of Westeros. They're still the overall, you know, ruling family, but they don't.
However, sentiment has changed toward them. And before the break, you mentioned that what happened to Tanzel was through no fault of her own. Is it possible to view this through Arion's perspective and say maybe she was doing a bit of propaganda?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's certainly what he claims. That he claims that them depicting the slaying of a dragon in this puppet show is trying to raise rebellion against the Targaryens.
Which, ironically, he's doing a fantastic job of on his own, slaughtering knights' horses and gallivanting around like a jerk.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, it's not clearly established whether that was intended on Tanzel's part or not.
Yeah.
You know, she is Dornish. The Dornish aren't particularly fond of the Targaryens. Yeah, as we know from, you know, viewing later series, from viewing Game of Thrones. You know, we're talking about the people that where the Sand Snakes come from, and the people where Pedro Pascal's character comes from. You know, they set themselves up in opposition to the Targaryens. And Dorne is kind of its own realm, separate from the rule of the Targaryens.
Right.
So you can see where there is a cause to claim that it provides cover for the cruelty and the viciousness of Prince Arion, played by Finn Bennett. But we can question, because we don't know, it's not clearly established, whether that was the intent of Tansel and the other puppeteers, or whether she's innocent here and it's just a simple puppet show.
Yeah.
But we can't question
that she probably is running a bit of propaganda. However, I think so are the Targaryens by participating in this tourney in the first place. You look at how Baelor Breakspear carries himself, and he's one of the good Targaryens. Meanwhile, you have Raymond Fosterway, who is like really xenophobic. He's like a good guy. He's really xenophobic against Targaryens. And I think Aegg and Baelor are examples of how all Targaryens are not evil, incestuous conquerors. And I think the show will explore that more. But I do think that there probably was a little bit of intent behind doing that puppet show while the Targaryens were in town.
Maybe so. But I think what is indisputable is that the reaction to it is an overreaction.
Oh, yeah.
For him to jump in and break a woman's hand, it is understandable why a knight like Sir Duncan would stand up and be chivalrous and protect the innocent. Like, so the punishment does not fit the crime.
No. But yeah, in these medieval worlds, they seldom do.
And nor should Arion be judge, jury, and executioner.
Right. When this happens, they decide to do not just a trial by combat, which is something we've seen before, but a trial by seven, representing the seven gods, and that means each team, Arion's team and Dunk's team, have to go and find six knights that are going to battle on their side. Obviously, for a royal, this is incredibly easy, but Dunk is this outsider in this strange new world, so he has to go and put together this ragtag team so that they can ultimately do this battle in the fifth of six episodes.
Well, and this is where the series turns like more to the brutality that we're used to from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, that particular episode, episode five, the battle in this is absolutely brutal. And moreover, in the course of this episode, we also get a flashback to Dunk's origins as a young boy. And that is also absolutely brutal and heartbreaking.
Did you find it to impede on the momentum of the battle, or did you think it served the story well to go into a flashback?
I was worried about it when it went into a flashback, but I think it pulled it off.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I could understand where, like, at first it feels like, oh, wow, they're just bringing the action to a halt. And you kind of wonder what's going on here. Because at first it's not even clear that that's a flashback.
Uh-huh.
Until you realize who we're talking to in the flashback part. So there is that confusion. But, you know, at the same time, that whole, like, fog of war, it does kind of fit. And it does show why Dunk is who he is and why he is inspired to get up and why he is someone that won't quit and why he is somebody who will stand up for what's right and why he is somebody who took the teachings of Sir Arion of Pennytree. They got to come up with a name in this franchise to not have all the names be so damn similar.
Yeah.
It's Sir Arlen, not Sir Arion, but Arlen and Arion are very close to each other, and it's, especially when you're reading them, it's how many like Aegons and, you know, et cetera's are there. It's just
a lot of Aegons.
Yeah, and I will say this: I want to backtrack to what you said about how not all the Targaryens are one way. Could say that about Dany at one point too.
Sure.
And if you know the future of Aegg, I'm just going to leave it at that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Like a band of gypsies, we go down the highway. We're the best of friends, insisting that the world keep turning our way. And our way is on the road again. I just can't wait to get on the road again. My love is making music with my friend, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us, and we've been talking about the world of Westeros, and in particular, the new series, The Night of the Seven Kingdoms. Or is it A Night of the Nine Kingdoms, Jeremy?
Isn't this the new tradition? Wait till the end of a series or a movie and say, actually, we're changing the title.
Do you think they are actually changing the title? Do you think that season two, because there will be a season two, is going to be A Night of the Nine Kingdoms?
Nah, I think they'll keep it, but it was a funny little gag at the end.
Yeah, so there is a bit at the end where they're discussing, you know, the Seven Kingdoms, and Egg points out to Duncan, again, Egg is the brains of this operation, that there are actually nine kingdoms, and he's right, there are.
Yeah.
Two of them don't fall under the rule of the Iron Throne. And I think that's where that comes from. So the seven kingdoms are the seven kingdoms that fall under the rule of the Iron Throne. But Dorne is a kingdom, and Dorne does not fall under the rule of the Iron Throne. And I don't remember what the ninth one was, do you?
I don't off the top of my head. No, I don't.
But we end the series. We're not going to get into spoilers of what happens with this great battle and everything and what happens to that. But it does end with Egg officially becoming Dunk's squire and them heading off onto the road to new adventures.
And there's this brilliant shot. I think your song selection was fantastic. But we see a kind of, he's not looking like a ghost or a specter, but a vision of Sir Arlen Pennytree. And his path diverges from the two of them, and he just kind of trails off into the fields. And I thought that was such a beautiful image and moment, because I really did come to love Sir Arlen after just a couple minutes of screen time.
So here's what I do want to discuss about the end. Dunk and Egg are discussing where they're going from here. Keeping in mind that Egg is the brains of the operation. Egg is the one that suggests that they travel to Dorne. What do you think are Egg's motivations here? Because I think there are a couple of ways that can go.
I know the books, but I do think in context of the show, what he wants to do is get away from the rule of his father, because while you said he officially becomes his squire, he just took off again.
Yeah, that's true. Because he presents, he was once again not telling Dunk the whole truth. He is telling Dunk, my father bade me to become your squire. And we learn that no, he didn't. He just took off.
Yeah, it's like he wants to get out of his dad's jurisdiction. Yeah, if I had to guess.
His father did want Egg to be Dunk squire, because Egg needs to be a squire and Dunk is the only knight that he would agree to squire to, but he wanted to do it under a situation that he could control, where they would be in Storm's End, and, you know, and Dunk said, no, I won't do it. I'll only do it if, you know, I can go my own way. And we're made to believe that the king has relented and allowed Egg to go with Dunk, but we soon find out in the post-credit scene that Egg has run off once again.
So what do you think was his motivation? I'm curious.
So I think that can be a motivation. I think another motivation can be that he believes that with Tansel, the puppeteer, being Dornish, that she may have gone to Dorn, and he may be trying to put Dunk back with Tansel, because he could see that Dunk fell for Tansel.
I think that's also a great theory.
So he may be looking out for Dunk's happiness here.
Yeah.
There could be a more dubious aspect in that, while I don't really necessarily think this of Egg, she was seen as raising rebellion against the Targaryens, and perhaps the motivation is to root out this rebellion against the Targaryens.
I would almost wonder if it were to incite greater rebellion against the Targaryens, because this brings up an interesting questioning of Egg's motives. When Egg saw that Arion was abusing Tansel, he ran straight to Dunk. Is it possible that he thought Dunk was just going to rid him of this terrible brother at that time? Or do you think it was legitimately that he was concerned about Tansel?
I think that it was at least one of the two, but could be both. I think that he was legitimately concerned about Tansel. I think he's generally a good person. But He does later say, I wish he'd killed him.
Yeah, and goes into the room to almost off himself, you know?
Yeah. So
I agree with you. I do think that motivations can be layered and nuanced, but it does seem that he wants to desperately extract himself from the Targaryen dynasty.
Do you think it's that, or do you think that he just wants to... Do you think he doesn't want to be king?
He's so far down the line of succession that the thought of him becoming a king is almost like he's like sixth in line. So like so many things would have to go wrong for him to be king.
But and yet we know from the universe that he does become king.
Right.
So is that by so much goes wrong by accident and happenstance, or is he playing the Game of Thrones?
Well, I guess time will tell. It does seem like there are machinations at work that make things happen the way that they do.
Well, as we know, I'll go back to the famous quote from the very first episode of Game of Thrones, which is in the book as well. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
Yeah. I like to think that at this point in their lives, they're not interested in playing the Game of Thrones, and I think that's why the show is singular. But obviously there are Targaryens involved in the mix. And real quick before we wrap this up, on that note of virtue and morality, do you think that Baelor Breakspere was actually valiant and courageous by fighting on the side of Dunk, or was that pretty morally dubious of him considering he knew the King's Guard wouldn't attack him?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that he was standing up for what's right, but I think he also had a false sense of security.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and I'm going to, kind of lean on House of the Dragon a little bit here too in this regard. As a general rule, blonde Targaryen bad, brunette Targaryen good.
Facts, dude. Big facts.
And Baelor Breakspere was brunette.
Yeah, he was a bastard, all right.
Yeah, so, it's... Every Targaryen that has ever gone bad has had that white blonde hair.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the biggest hell.
So, I don't know. The flip side of that is we can say, or we're still looking at House of the Dragon. Do we think Rhaena is bad? Rhaenyra, excuse me. Again, similar names.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. By the end of season two, I think it's pretty objective. Between season one of Game of Thrones, season one, House of the Dragon, and season one of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, what does your ranking look like?
You mean in terms of which is the like the best or the most exciting
best,
or
least,
the
yeah?
I think you still got to give it to the original. I think the I think Game of Thrones went places people didn't think they went would go, and that's certainly no more true than in the fate of Ned Stark. You know, we were set up to believe that Ned Stark was the hero of the entire series. And spoiler alert, he's not.
Spoiler alert, he's Sean Bean.
Yeah, well, that, you know, now that's a thing. But I thought the first season of House of the Dragon was very solid. Maybe the time jump should have been saved for season two. I'm not sure. So iffy. And then this new series is so much of a different tone and so lighter that it's almost hard to judge it on the same scale with the other two, because it is not of the same scale as the other two.
But it's so much more focused.
It is. It is. I mean, in terms of just sheer enjoyment, it might be number two, but that's only because something's got to be last.
Like I am in lockstep with that right now.
I have no serious knocks on House of the Dragon season one or season two. I'm a big fan of the series. I'm very much looking forward to season three, which looks like we're going to get in June. Mm-hmm. And they're talking already about that this may wrap up with season four. So there's not a ton of this left. If they can stick the landing better than most people think Game of Thrones did, and I do not have the problem with the finale of Game of Thrones that most people have.
You're a madman.
You know, then this may prove to be a more overall well-viewed series than the original was. We'll see. But, you know, that remains to be seen in the future, and we'll be back in the future. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.